Hello, this is Ann Weller with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. It conducts innovative research and programs in health and nutrition, and it provides consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the Center for Science in the Public Interest promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The work of the Center for Science in the Public Interest is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no government or industry funding, and Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The November 2010 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter contains a safe food report entitled Walking on Eggshells, Keeping Eggs and Hens Safe. The report, which is authored by Nutrition Action Health Letter senior nutritionist David Shart, addresses the national debate about how our eggs are produced. After Robin Schaefer and restaurant goers in at least 10 states became infected by salmonella in May, epidemiologists in Minnesota and California were able to finger the likely source. Two factory farms in Iowa that together produced more than a billion eggs each year. But Wright County Egg and Hillendale Farms did not just supply restaurants. Their eggs were also sold in bulk to other companies that packaged them for resale in supermarkets under evocative brand names like Sunny Farms, Sunny Meadow, and Wholesome Farms. When inspectors from the Food and Drug Administration finally descended on the two farms in mid-August, what they found was anything but sunny or wholesome. Both companies' laying houses, which each held tens of thousands of hens, were infested with flies, maggots, wild birds, and rodents. Chicken manure was piled 4 to 8 feet high below some of the cages. Any of that might have been the source of the salmonella. In fact, in September, congressional investigators discovered that Wright County Eggs had detected salmonella on its equipment and in its barns at least 73 times during the past 2 years. While the companies agreed to recall a half billion of their eggs, by that point most of them had probably already been eaten. There is no question that these farms were not operating with the standards of practice that we consider responsible, said FDA Commissioner Margaret Homburg. Yet neither egg operation had ever been inspected by the FDA. The agency rarely checks food plants. But the FDA now says that it intends to inspect all 600 of the major U.S. egg producers. Filth aside, Is there a more humane way to produce the nation's nearly 80 billion eggs each year? And if so, is it less likely to turn out eggs that are tainted with salmonella? More than 9 out of 10 eggs are laid by hens that are confined for their lifetimes in battery cages, typically 5 to 8 hens to a cage. The cages are arrayed in batteries, rows of cages stacked one atop another. And within each cage, every hen has about 67 square inches of floor space. That is not enough room for them to stretch their wings or engage in other activities that are natural for hens, like nesting, perching, and an activity of rolling around on the ground called dust bathing. It is also not enough room for them to lay their eggs, like uncaged chickens can. The birds suffer from extraordinary frustration on a daily basis, says Paul Shapiro of the Humane Society of the United States. Chickens in nature have a very strong desire to lay their eggs in a private, dark, secluded nesting area. But these battery cages don't always allow them. Don't ever allow them to do that. A far smaller number of laying hens live in indoor cage-free houses where they can walk around, spread their wings, lay their eggs in nests, and in some facilities perch and dust bathe. But most cage-free hens are not free to wander outside. The list of supermarkets, food processors, and restaurants that have rejected eggs from battery cages in favor of cage-free eggs is growing. In February, Walmart, the nation's largest grocery store chain, announced that all eggs sold under its Great Value brand will be cage-free. The company joins Costco, Safeway, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, and other retailers in shifting to cage-free eggs. This summer, the world's two largest cruise companies, Carnival Cruise Lines and Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines, announced that they will begin converting to cage-free for the several million eggs they serve to passengers each year. Ben & Jerry's, Burger King, Denny's, Subway, and Wendy's are also shifting to cage-free eggs, as have the dining facilities at nearly 350 colleges and universities. And the state of California has announced that it will ban the sale of eggs from battery-caged hens beginning in the year 2015. Why this growing movement to cage-free production? Most companies that switch to cage-free eggs cite its more humane treatment of laying hens. It is clear to us that cage-free farms, when certified to meet third-party standards, give hens more space to do as they please, to scratch around, to roost, and to gossip about the hen house, says Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. Are cage-free eggs more likely to be free of salmonella and other contaminants? Well, that is not clear. The evidence suggests that cage-free facilities have significantly lower risks of salmonella infection, says the Humane Society's Paul Shapiro. That evidence comes from Europe. In 2004 and 2005, for example, the European Food Safety Agency took samples from more than 5,300 egg-laying facilities in 24 different countries. And across the board, it found a higher risk of salmonella in the caged facilities. says Shapiro. But European egg facilities are smaller and are different in other ways, argue U.S. producers. Battery cages are the most effective way to separate hens and their eggs from bacteria-containing excrement, they maintain. And keeping 5 to 8 birds in their own cage reduces the possibility of their transmitting disease to other hens in the flock. So who's right? Well, there is not enough reliable data to tell. We really do not know if there is a big difference between salmonella levels in caged and cage-free hens, says Jeffrey Armstrong, Dean of Agriculture and Natural Resources at Michigan State University. Armstrong chairs the Animal Welfare Advisory Committee of the United Egg Producers, an industry group. Anyone who says that the evidence is clear, they're just not reading all the literature, says Dr. Armstrong. Now, the Centers for Disease Control and the Center for Science and the Public Interest make several recommendations on egg handling for you to avoid salmonella. Salmonella in eggs is rare. Just one in every 20,000 eggs is contaminated. But if that egg happens to be in your next carton, those statistics do not matter. Refrigerate your eggs as soon as possible in their original carton in the coldest part of the refrigerator. That's usually the body of the refrigerator, not the door. And discard cracked or dirty eggs. Wash your hands, your cooking utensils, and food preparation surfaces with soap and water after contact with raw eggs. Cook your eggs until both the white and the yolk are firm, because salmonella could be in either part. Use pasteurized egg whites, like egg beaters, in place of regular eggs. Or try pasteurized eggs, which look and taste like regular eggs, but have been heated in the shell to kill bacteria and viruses. You can identify them by the red P that's stamped on the carton or on each egg. And eat cooked eggs promptly. They should not be kept warm, like in a steam table at a restaurant, or at room temperature for more than 2 hours. And avoid dishes made with raw or undercooked eggs. That includes homemade or restaurant-made hollandaise sauce or Caesar salad dressing. Commercially bottled versions are okay. The Centers for Disease Control are also the source for the following information about salmonella. If you become infected with salmonella enteritis, you'll typically develop fever, abdominal cramps, and diarrhea, beginning 12 to 72 hours after you eat a contaminated food. And you will most likely be sick for 4 to 7 days. Most victims do not require treatment other than drinking plenty of fluids. Antibiotics usually are not necessary. But the diarrhea can be severe, and some people require hospitalization and rehydration with intravenous fluids. In rare cases, a salmonella infection spreads from the intestines to the bloodstream, and that can be fatal unless the person is treated promptly, cautions the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The elderly, infants, and those with impaired immune systems are more likely to have a more serious illness. So here's the bottom line. Eggs are an inexpensive source of protein, But a typical yolk contains roughly 200 milligrams of cholesterol, and that is two-thirds of the American Heart Association's 300 milligrams of cholesterol daily limit for healthy people. And eggs are cheap enough that most people can probably afford to pay extra for cage-free or organic eggs that are more humanely produced than battery cage eggs. And don't believe everything you read on an egg carton. Some claims mean something while others don't mean anything. Here are some common claims. The following claims are certified, that is, they have been verified and you can trust them. The USDA organic claim includes hens that must be uncaged inside barns or warehouses and must have outdoor access. Hens must be fed an organic, all-vegetarian diet that is free of antibiotics and pesticides. Beak cutting is permitted. Now, egg producers often trim hens' beaks to prevent the animals from harming each other. And hens cannot have received any antibiotics after they were 3 days old. The American Humane Certification includes hens that can be confined in cages or can be cage-free. And beak cutting is allowed for this certification. There is an animal welfare approved certification, in which case hens are raised by independent family farmers in flocks of no more than 500 birds that spend their adult lives outside. Beak cutting is prohibited, and the animals are not fed any animal byproducts. These eggs are available at some farmer markets and restaurants. Certified Humane Raised and Handled Certification can be verified that hens must be uncaged inside barns or warehouses, but may be kept indoors at all times, and beak cutting is allowed. The United Egg Producers Certification meets minimum voluntary industry standards, which, according to the Humane Society, permit routine, cruel, and inhumane factory farm practices. Regarding nutrient claims for eggs, caged and cage-free hens typically eat the same corn-based diet, so there is no nutritional difference between their eggs. But some producers supplement their hens' diets with ingredients that raise the level of some nutrients. Two large Eggland's Best eggs, for example, contain 50% of the daily value for vitamin E, and that is 10 times as much as two regular large eggs contain. If an egg carton makes a claim, check the nutrition facts label to see what percent of a day's worth of the nutrient the eggs supply. Another safe food report, published in the September 2010 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter, is entitled Colorless Worried. This report addresses a proposed ban on synthetic food dyes. It is authored by Nutrition Action Health Letter Executive Editor Michael Jacobson and Sarah Kobluski, a PhD candidate in the Molecular Toxicology Program at the University of California in Los Angeles. Thousands of foods are dyed with one or more synthetic food colorings to make them look more appetizing. For example, that bright, cheesy orange color of Kraft macaroni and cheese is courtesy of yellow dyes 5 and 6. Synthetic food colorings are manufactured from petroleum. Food companies like them because they are cheaper, more stable, and brighter than natural colorings like paprika, beet, or blueberry juice concentrate, and beta-carotene. Considering the proliferation of junk candies, breakfast cereals, snack foods, and other processed concoctions, it is no surprise that per capita use of synthetic dyes has increased fivefold over the past 50 years. But it may surprise consumers to learn that there are lingering questions about the safety of most of the 9 synthetic dyes that can be used in food. These 9 are blue 1, blue 2, citrus red 2, green 3, orange B, red 3, red 40, yellow 5, and yellow 6. So here are 3 examples. 20 years ago, the Food and Drug Administration banned red 3 from cosmetics and topically applied drugs because the dye caused cancer of the thyroid gland in animals. But the FDA never got around to prohibiting most uses in food or drugs that are swallowed. In 1984, the then-acting FDA commissioner said that red 3 was, quote, of greatest public health concern and has clearly been shown to induce cancer. Since then, the food industry has poured 5 million pounds of red 3 into the food supply. Here are some of the foods made with red 3. Edie's Take the Cake ice cream. Orbit Bubble Mint White Gum. Sara Lee's Signature Selections. Andy's Chocolate Mint Cream Pie. Walmart Rainbow Mix Dessert Sprinkles. And Jolly Rancher Popsicles. Red dye 40 is another one of those 9 synthetic dyes that can be used in food. And in one mouse study, the most widely used synthetic coloring seemed to speed up the appearance of immune system tumors. And in a second study, it did not. The inconsistency and therefore the safety of red dye 40 was never satisfactorily resolved. And among the foods made with red 40 are Gatorade Fruit Punch, Pillsbury Grands, Flaky Layers Honey Butter Biscuits, Betty Crocker Super Moist Carrot Cake, and Betty Crocker Bake-O's Bacon Flavored Bits. The second most commonly used synthetic dye, which is also known as tartrazine, is yellow dye number 5. And it causes sometimes severe hypersensitivity reactions, mainly hives in some people. 30 years ago, the FDA estimated that about 100,000 U.S. consumers were sensitive to tartrazine, and so they required the dye to be listed by name on food labels. Hives is not the only concern with yellow dye 5. In 6 of 11 test tube or animal experiments, the dye damaged DNA, and that is often a sign that a compound is a carcinogen. But yellow dye number 5 did not cause cancer in the only good rat study. Still, the FDA typically requires tests in at least 2 rodent species, and a study in mice did not meet the agency's research guidelines. Another reason to worry about yellow dye number 5 is that it can be contaminated with the human carcinogen benzidine. So can yellow dye number 6. So the bottom line is that until more studies are done, yellow 5 should not be allowed in food. Among the foods that are made with yellow dye number 5 are Vlasic pickles, Tropicana lemonade, Betty Crocker au gratin potatoes, Yoplait key lime pie yogurt, Pillsbury toaster strudels, and Simply Chex cheddar snacks. Now, for 40 years, parents and pediatricians have complained that foods made with synthetic colors worsen the behavior of some children. And for 40 years, the food industry and the FDA have dismissed the claims as unproven. But when a 2004 meta-analysis pulled the results of 15 studies, it found a modest worsening of behavior in children diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder who were given foods with synthetic dyes. And since then, two large studies commissioned by the British government showed that dyes can also affect children who have not been diagnosed with a behavioral disorder. In one, the University of Southampton researchers gave beverages with and without 6 dyes to 137 3-year-olds and 138 and 9-year-olds who had been recruited from local nurseries and schools. And the amount of dye in the drinks was equivalent to the amount in 4 to 8 ounces of candy. The children's inattention, impulsivity, and overactivity, as measured by a composite score from teachers, parents, the researchers, and a computerized test, increased slightly but significantly after they drank the colors-laced drink compared to another occasion when they drank a similar-looking but colors-free placebo. The parents, the teachers, and researchers did not know which drink the children had consumed when they did their rating. In response to that and earlier studies, the British government urged the food and restaurant industries to remove the 6 dyes by December 31, 2009. 4 of the 6, red dye number 3, red dye number 40, yellow number 5, and yellow number 6, can be used in food in the United States. What's more, the European Parliament passed a law requiring a warning notice that states may have an adverse effect on activity and attention in children on foods that contain at least 1 of the 6 dyes. Studies have shown that certain food colorings and preservatives may cause or worsen hyperactive behavior in some children, notes the American Academy of Family Physicians. They recommend that you talk to your doctor about whether you need to make any changes to your child's diet. So, the bottom line? Synthetic dyes have caused allergic type reactions in some people and hyperactive behavior in some children. They've caused tumors or mutations in some animal studies, and they may contain cancer-causing impurities. Some simply have not been adequately tested. What's more, they have no nutritional benefit and are often used in junky kids' foods or other foods of little value. So our advice is that consumers should avoid synthetic dyes, and the food industry should switch to safe, natural colorings, and the FDA should ban the dyes. We've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. I hope you'll join me at the same time next month. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is readily available.